Well, we'd like to welcome everybody out tonight to the Southeastern Region December ACT meeting. Thank you everyone for coming out to make a quorum, and even if Todd was a little late.
Yeah, but I'm always late.
Have you seen how big
he is? Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't say anything to Charlie.
They didn't know you were a lot meaner than me, though.
That's a trick.
First item, approval of the agenda and minutes. Do we have any discussion or any questions on the agenda or the minutes?
Carl made a little amendment that I corrected on the copy I sent Stacy. Some comments were attributed to him or not from him.
I saw those. And those got changed?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So on those minutes, we would approve the amended minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I can say approved as amended.
Okay. Any other discussion on those two items?
Move to accept the agenda and the minutes as amended.
Second.
Okay, motion by Todd Huntington, seconded by Kent Johnson. All in favor? Okay. Unanimous. So I'll give a wildlife board update, and Chris jump in. And if you have any questions, please ask. Mainly, I'll try to hit the topics that were brought up from our RAC, and if you have any questions about any of the other items, please bring those up. But to start off, one of those was the motion that to allow an increased amount of youth hunters to be able to get the tags. And the division came up and showed some numbers, and I wish that we could have that presentation here for all of us, because it was really good. But one of the things that they presented was the numbers of what is happening now currently. And they showed that right now the youth that put in for the draw, 48% of those are drawn a tag. And they compared that to what's happening with the adults. And right now, of the adults that are putting in for a tag, that's 35%. So
it's because 20% of all tags go to youth.
Yeah. There is some system in place, and it is allocating a higher percentage to youth. But that's what the numbers are currently at. There's quite a bit of discussion, as you can imagine, on the muzzleloader and the scope magnification, and it actually came down to a tie. The chairman had to break the vote, and it was to go with the division's proposal to allow the higher scope magnification.
Can I chime in there? So the three of the five racks, I believe, voted to not have scopes on muzzleloader, so it's 3-2. The public survey that we did, that we presented, showed that the majority of the public supported a scope on a muzzleloader. And then they got a lot of comments, and maybe you did too, about this from the public, and the majority of the comments supported scopes. And so with that, it was a good discussion, a good debate back and forth, but in the end, it passed 4-3.
Any questions on that?
Yes.
Question or comment?
Both. So why don't we just do all the proposals by survey? Why do we have racks? I can't figure that out. I was hoping Dr. King would be here tonight to give us a little bit, better explanation or something, because I'm still back to the three racks, to two, and we still, then we went off a survey. So what are we doing here? Let's just put it all out for a survey.
Well, I pointed out in the last meeting when we discussed it and voted on it that the very exact same individual in the very exact same survey said, no, we don't want to let nobody use a crossbow, but we want to let everybody use a scope on a muzzleloader. So they canceled themselves out. They argued against themselves, the very same individual. So in my opinion, the survey held no weight anyway.
There was a lot of discussion.
I'm sure it was. Yeah. I imagine it got lively at times.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to see the board just go with a survey. I think they weigh the survey versus the rack versus, you know, the division's recommendation. They weigh all that stuff and come up with a vote.
I just wondered if I could remind folks, you know, kind of be aware of the microphone. I've got a compressor on here that makes it so Kathy Jo can do the minutes pretty good, but the audience sometimes can't hear.
I have a question on the youth hunt opportunities. Is there any measurement being made of how many more youth we're recruiting by offering the youth more? I mean, that's the whole objective is to bring more youth in. And if all we're measuring is what percent of the youth are getting tags, it's not answering a question if we're doing any good by offering more opportunity to the youth.
I appreciate that question, and just one of the things they didn't bring that up there, but one of the requests I would have to Chris is, you know, in the past Bill would have on our shorter meetings, he would have like an education or 101, and I would ask that maybe we would bring down Lindy and maybe have that discussion of the youth and what opportunities and have her answer that question of Darius, of, you know, what with the work that we're doing with the youth, what effect is it having, and what is there out there that we can possibly do, you know, to have an effect on that. I think that would be a great discussion for our RAC to be able to maybe further get into that. So there was a lot of discussion on the elk plan, and one of, if you remember, one of the big discussions was the division in the elk management plan, that large, they kept calling it a mega unit, but over by the Boulder, the Dutton, the Monroe, where those elk really move. In the management plan, they moved the Dutton, I'm trying to remember which other unit, up an age objective, because they were actually quite a bit lower than the Boulder and the Monroe. So they moved them up one full age objective. Was it the Dutton and the Panguitch? So the Dutton and the Panguitch moved up one full unit. And in the proposal, it was to move the Monroe down. There's quite a bit of discussion that would have made them all the same age. The motion was made to keep the Monroe at the 7.5 to 8, and that motion passed. There was a motion for the Southeastern Region Deer Management Plan to keep it the same. I brought up the good discussion that we had about the Green River Valley, and one of the discussions by the division was, there's quite a bit of discussion as they went to these individual unit plans. There was quite a bit of this statewide of, you know, even though most of who hunted the Green Valley proper was local residents, they had to do it with the Northeastern Region tag. And so there was a lot of discussion about that, but the division did not want to break from that, for the reason as it would separate the sheep unit, would be different from the deer unit, and all those maps would be separate. And they, in a lot of this proposal that we were going through, was to make the Henry's Mountain deer the same as Henry Mountain sheep, and to make all those uniform. So they asked that we did not break those up individually. It would, and if they did, they felt it would have to go clear to the Price River to be a definite boundary. And so there was quite a bit of discussion on that, and they didn't change it at this time, but Chris was thinking that it would be an action.
Yeah, I believe they made a motion to make it an action item, and so that'll be, which means the division will go back and look at that situation and that proposal, and we'll come to the board at a later date within the next year, mm-hmm. and bring that to the RACs and the boards and say whether we propose it or not propose it.
There was also quite a bit of discussion with the gentleman that come from the CWMU and asked for the 2 permit increase that was comparing it to what the neighbor CWMUs had based off of acreage. The Wildlife Board decided to not allow that 2-tag increase because they felt that there was a lot of unfairness in the CWMU permit rule because a lot of the CWMUs were based off an old tag allocation, and many of them were off a new tag allocation. They asked the division to go back and rate everyone off of the same system and come back in a year with everyone on rated on the same system. So they didn't increase at that time, but asked that fairness could be brought.
So, as I understood from the discussion last month, then if they do that, everybody else is going to get cut. I mean, everybody.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
it's going to stir the pot.
Probably, yes.
It's going to be interesting.
Don't you think, Chris? Aren't they going to get cut?
I think that's the implication.
Well,
a year from now, we'll have a really good rack.
Well, get ready.
So Bill Bates did come up and speak to that, and he felt like even though it looked at a quick glance that could happen, he felt like the Manti, for example, there was a lot of tag increase overall from when those permits were given, so there's a lot more tags on the Manti. So some of that would all be equated into the system. Guy, you can.
Yeah, if I could, I was just going to add to that. Part of the issue is, you know, a lot of these were, when we first started this program, it was called the Posted Hunting Unit, PHU program. There weren't the guidelines then that we had now. When we went to the new program and came up with new guidelines, they grandfathered most of those units into that at the levels they were at. It's not complete. There's some that, yeah, they're going to be over. We got some that are within, you know, the guidelines and some that are without. So, but there will be some changes once we go through and assess that and see where we sit with all those units in relation to those guidelines. So that's kind of how we got in this mess.
And no one will see an increase. I guess we'll see a lot of decreases, you think?
Most likely, yeah. Yeah.
And, yikes. Yeah, and again, I think that they said they wanted to rate those based on the unit allocation also, so that it was fair within what the units given based to the private land also.
Yeah, correct. That's within the guidelines that we now use with any new unit or any of those units after that, is it's based on the total permits that we issue for that unit and the percentage of private land, the percentage that goes to the public land and things like that. So, but that was, none of that was done initially when that program was first started. So anyway.
So those tags will go back to the general public.
Oh, no, they'll find some other place. I'm sorry, Trish, it ain't going to come back to you.
Yeah. No, that's true. They could, because we look at a total number of permits.
Right.
And so if that percentage is less, then it could go to the public.
Did you hear that, Charlie?
I did. Congratulations.
There was discussion on our motion that was picked up about the national parks. There was... The map actually showed Canyonlands National Park as being part of the was it the sheep, I believe, the sheep unit, and so they're going to look at that and correct that.
It was corrected before the board meeting.
Yes.
And so it was part of our recommendation to the board.
Yep.
But that's because of this RAC pointed that out, so thank you.
One of the discussion items at the Wildlife Board meeting was, and maybe many of you have seen it now on the news, but was with the letter that the Western governors have prepared with the Mexican wolf and the Wildlife Board signed a letter also approving that that was sent out. Had various science in it based on that they were worried about the boundary of the Mexican wolf being into Utah and Colorado, and worried about what that would do with the northern gray wolf and mixing those genetics, and there was various concerns in that document, but that letter was signed by the Wildlife Board and sent out with the governor's letter.
So to be clear, the letter said we don't want Mexican wolves in Utah.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Okay.
I don't have really a regional update today. We just met a few weeks ago, and we've haven't done a whole lot, anything much different. The wildlife biologists are doing some flights right now, capturing deer, putting collars on them for some research. We had I think it was a Saturday after Iraq meeting, we had a great event here in Green River called Guns and Gals, and Trish was a part of that with Walt and two of our female biologists, Nicole and Makita, and we had 30 ladies show up, and I just heard great things about it. I rarely get emails from the public thanking me for different things, and I got a few emails from the public thanking me for that event, saying it was well attended and well done, and they want to see more of that in the future. And I was worried having it in Green River that we would have the attendance wouldn't be very high, but we had a lot, 30 ladies, so
30, yeah.
And there was some classroom instruction and some shooting, mm-hmm. So it's something we'll probably continue. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Trish, and it was a great event. Yeah.
I just want to say that on this deer capture project we're doing now, it's really pretty interesting stuff that we're doing. And so I want to invite any other RAC members that would like to come. Typically in the past with this is our deer survival unit study that we're doing. And typically it's just a project where we hand out radio collars and the capture crew go and catch the animals. But in this part, we're actually putting on GPS collars and we're having the does that are caught brought back to us, and we're processing them, taking samples, blood samples, doing a live CWD sample, things like that. So we're taking a lot of information, and some of this information hopefully in the future will relate back to habitat use. We'll have GPS locations where these animals are using. We'll look at the body condition of these animals and see if that relates at all to habitat use, trace minerals, things like that from blood work. So anyway, I just wanted to extend that invitation to anybody that wants to come out. Friday we'll probably be down at Charlie's Ranch in Montezuma Canyon. So and then Saturday we'll be somewhere out along Highway 95 near Black Mesa doing that. Brad is also doing it up north Friday and Saturday, so if anybody wants to go with Brad, to contact Brad, and so it'd be a chance to see what's going on and what we're actually doing.
Thank you.
All right, we will item number 5, R6573, the live lobster.
I'm Justin Hart. I'm the regional aquatic manager, and I'm presenting this on behalf of our Salt Lake Aquatic staff. This is just a simple rule change to our collection, importation, transportation, and possession rule of species. Currently, the rule requires a COR or a certificate of registration to possess live aquatic animals for commercial use. This includes live fish and crustacean held in tanks, at restaurants, grocery stores, and certain specialty markets. Neither the Utah Department of Agriculture or the Division of Wildlife have any desire to govern or control these things. We don't have any interest in, involvement regulation on this. So in order to exempt these species that really pose no risk to our resources here, we just need to make basically a change to some definitions. So we added a definition of marine aquatic animals, COR not required, to the rule. And it basically states that these animals spend their entire life cycle in a marine saltwater environment. They're not a species classified as invasive or nuisance in the state of Utah by state or federal law. And they're used within 30 days of possession for human consumption. They're obtained legally, and they're not released live into the environment or into the sewer system. And that's basically it. It's primarily, I think, targeted at lobsters, but I think there are a few other unique species at some specialty markets and restaurants up north. Some of the different cultures, I think, have some, have a few kind of oddball species, but again, they're all marine and not a risk to our resources here in the States.
Are on marine, or is there a saltwater crayfish?
Is there a saltwater crayfish? I don't know the answer to that. There's some brackish water ones I know, you know, that can kind of live in both, you know, estuary type things in the Gulf of Mexico that I can think of, but I don't know if there's a strictly saltwater crayfish. I don't know.
I'm just wondering if this is going to cause some confusion with people moving crayfish around, if there's a loophole there.
I don't think so. Okay. It's pretty well defined in our fishing guidebook.
Questions from the audience? Seeing a small audience, if there's any comments from the audience, there's comment cards there on the table. Please fill those out, and there's a microphone here in front. Please come state your name and different items. See no comment cards for this item. Okay. We'll entertain discussion from the BRAC.
It might be where it says marine animals, it might be a good decision to add saltwater in behind that in the language in the regulation, and not just leave it as just marine. That would avoid some confusion, I think, you know, and maybe the point that Darris brought up about crayfish too.
Marine pretty much means saltwater, right?
It does, yeah.
That's what its definition is.
It implies, yeah.
I know it's kind of implied, but I didn't know if that was...
Yeah, I mean, freshwater, marine, they're kind of the polar opposites. So in fisheries or whatever, it's interpreted. But, you know, from a public perspective, you might have a point.
Move to accept the division's proposal as presented.
Second. Motion made by Todd Huntington to accept rule R657-3, seconded by Charlie Tracy. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor? Passed unanimous.
I guess we should have made a motion that they have to bring some next time.
That'll work.
Now I'm hungry.
Hands on sky.
That's right. I really don't know what to walk out
there. So now next time, Les is going to bring a bear.
Yay! I love bears.
Not Winnie the Pooh.
Okay, so I see a few new faces, I think. Have you guys been through my presentation before?
Some haven't, some.
Okay, so I'll go into a little bit of the history then. So we have a black bear management plan. It's a 12-year plan. It was established in 2011, and it was put together. The plan was recommended by a black bear advisory group, which consisted of members listed there on the board. The plan was approved, went through the RAC and board process, was approved in 2011, and goes through 2023.
One of the things in the plan that is recommended is that bare recommendations be done on 3-year cycles. So during that, the life of that 12-year plan, you should make 4 recommendations. However, because we made some pretty significant changes to our season structure, we added a summer season, which went through the month of June, which was a new thing for us. We also allowed the take over bait with any weapon, so you can now use a rifle over bait, which previously that was restricted to archery tackle. We felt strongly that we needed to monitor this a little more closely and go back to an annual recommendation cycle on this till we feel comfortable with our recommendations and that we're not over-harvesting our populations and affecting them negatively. So we're going a little bit off plan by doing yearly recommendations. The plan goal is that we will maintain a healthy, balanced bear population, balanced with livestock depredation, nuisance and human-bear conflict, which are our main drivers on bear take, habitat limitations, other wildlife species, population objectives, and, of course, providing recreational opportunity for houndsmen and hunters. Go back really quick. We define a healthy, balanced bear population as one that has a proportion of breeding age animals that will maintain population levels consistent with habitat and maintain genetic variability. So that being said, we have 3 different strategies that we use for determining our recommendations on each of our 30 management units in the state. And we base it on historic harvest levels. All of our hunters in the state are required to bring their bear in after they harvest it. We check the carcass and we remove a tooth for aging. So we have a really long-term data set, at least 15 years on bear ages and sex of harvest, and so that's what we use for monitoring our populations. That's what we do in the absence of doing things like fawing that you can do for big game animals and that type of thing. So we have 3 different strategies that we can use to set permits. A light strategy is used on units where the bear population is fairly low. We want to see that population increase. You've got young age males, you don't have a lot of the females, and you've got a low level of human-bear conflict. About 25% of our units are managed under a light strategy. A moderate strategy is where most of our bear units fall. And on this one, we try and maintain female harvest between 30 to 40% because we're maintaining the population. We don't want to see a huge growth in population, but we're trying to make that population stable. So we do want to see some female harvest. Our adult males that are older than 5 years old, we want to see our harvest be about 25 to 35% of those being older than 5. On a moderate level unit, you have to have lower levels of human-bear conflict, not a lot of conflict issues. A liberal unit is one where we have a lot of livestock depredation. Usually the nuisance take is greater than our sport take. And on these units, we're trying to decrease the population, so we try and have a higher female harvest between 40 to 45%, and we want fewer adult males on those units. So our current status, not much has changed since I came around last year. Like I said, we've got 15 years of harvest data that includes our age and sex. So we're able to go back and kind of reconstruct our populations and build it back to kind of guesstimate what our populations are. In 2009, we did some population or some habitat density population estimates, and that put our bear population at about 3,500. Using population reconstruction, so the known ages and sex in our harvest, we estimate that we've probably got a minimum of 4,100 bears in our state. In addition, we also look at our bear denning data. Each of our regional offices have female bears that are radio collared, and we go into those dens every year and we look at the cubs to see First off, if she should have had cubs, are they there? The shape of the females and that type of thing, and it kind of gives us estimates on survival and reproduction and all of that. We also estimate based on these two things that we've got a population increase about 5 to 6% annually. So our average statewide harvest success is usually between 42 to 45%. Last year, or in 2014, that was up to 50%. This current season, it went down a little bit to 47%. In 2014, our sport harvest was 283, and our total harvest was 378. So the difference between those two, we had a really high nuisance problem in 2014. The Division of Wildlife Resources and Wildlife Services, between the two agencies, we removed 95 bears. We wanted to kind of reverse that trend. We'd rather be seeing the harvest go towards sport hunt rather than through the agency. So that was the primary reason, rather than dumping a whole bunch of permits into a bunch of different units. We tried to change season structure and harvest methods to try and increase harvest without having to increase permits. I'm really glad to say that it actually worked. Our sport harvest this last year was 325, and our depredation and nuisance take went back down to 45, which is traditionally where it's been. So our total harvest overall was 370, so it was 8 fewer bears taken the previous year. But we did increase sport harvest by about 20%. So again, just to show you, the line with the triangles is the number of permits that have been issued. You can see that between 2014 and 15, there was a sharp increase in the number of permits. So although we increased the number of permits greatly, we didn't increase overall harvest from last year. The primary reason for this is that the crux or the majority of permits that we increased were in low success hunts and strategies. So things like spot and stock took the brunt of the increase. The one thing I will show you again too, so 2015's the far bar on the right. The light gray color is our sport harvest take, so you can see that that was higher, and then the dark gray part of the bar is our depredation and nuisance take, and you can see that we did decrease that. And then just one more representation of our depredation nuisance. You can see that since 2006, 95 bears was our highest that we've had in the past 10 years. We don't want to see that much take, and so we're trying to do things using sportsmen to help decrease densities in some of these areas where we're having a lot of problems. We'd still like to see this trend of depredation and nuisance take decline, and so we plan to continue with the recommendations that we had this past year, with a few changes based on what harvest levels we did see in some of our units. So pretty much everything will be the same as last year with a few changes. Previous to last year, we only had one spring season. What we did this last year was we split the spring into a spring season, and then we added a summer season. The spring season, what we did is made that primarily a hound or a spot and stock season, so no bait can be used during this time period. It goes from April 2nd to the first week in June. Previously, the spring season went to the last week of May. So on these slides, as we go through these seasons, I've got a category here that says percent permits filled. This is not harvest success, because we didn't do a survey and find out how many people did or didn't hunt. Of the permits we issued, this is how many were filled. So 49% of the permits that we issued were filled. So it's different than success, just so that you understand. So our summer limited entry, this was our no hound season, primarily because we have a lot of fawning and calving going on during this season. You could either establish a bait station or you could do spot and stock. We're recommending this season continue and that it go from June 4th to July 1. Previously, so last year we weren't recommending an additional week or anything on the front end of these seasons for pre-baiting. Through the public process, that was changed and a 2-week pre-baiting season was added on. We did still see some conflicts or get conflict. I mean, I took a brunt of some of those calls. It wasn't a huge number, but it still is occurring. And so we'd like to still keep these seasons separate. We're willing to allow people to begin baiting 1 week early, but they can't begin hunting until June 4th. The percent permits filled during this season was really quite high. It was 62%.
Well, while you're there on that slide, so clarify the begin baiting 1 week early. How does that compare to what it was last year?
Last year it was the board approved a 2-week early, and we're still just trying to keep those two things separate because what we get, I mean, if you put bait out and somebody's chasing with hounds and you've got a bear that's finding that bait, you're going to have an issue. And everybody asks, well, why isn't it an issue in the fall? Well, bears don't typically come into bait as easy in the fall as they do in the spring and summer. So we don't see the conflicts like we do in the fall. Plus, in the fall seasons, we offer far fewer permits than we do in the spring or summer. And I'll just say that the percent permits filled here, I think, is a little bit higher because we do allow the any weapon takeover bait, and I think that that did influence success a bit. We'd like to still recommend a fall limited entry archery only bait only season on the Book Cliffs unit only. The season dates for this would run from August 8th to September 9th. The weapon type on this hunt would be limited to archery tackle only. Or you could bait or spot and stock. One of the things that we ran into last year, it was a little confusing because the board did approve the 2-week pre-baiting, but none of our other baiting seasons had that. And so to be consistent, we'd recommend that you add that 1-week pre-baiting approval on any of the seasons that allow bait. Again, this is only on the Book Cliffs. The percent permits filled on the sheet that I sent out in the rack packet, it had an error. It said 0%. It should have said 40%, so that was my fault. And then I just noticed I don't have a D on board, so why do I find errors when I'm in front of you?
You got bear on the mind.
It's a boar. So then on the fall limited entry, no changes really to this season. We're recommending August 20th to September 26th and then close down during the big game seasons and then open up again October 29th to November 17th. The percent permits filled on this season are at 41%. And again, we'd recommend if you use bait, you could bait 1 week early. The LaSalle and San Juan have a little bit different season date, August 13th to September 9th, and then again October 29th to November 17th. You'll see that the percent permits filled on this is quite low. It's at 8 and 4%, but part of that's because it includes some of the estimates for spot and stock. So that's not really the limited entry thing. It has spot and stock included in that. On the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek South, the recommended season dates for that, October 4th to November 17th. Limited entry spot and stock, the Book Cliffs Little Creek, we're recommending a spring season, April 2nd to June 3rd, and then a fall season, September 10th to November 17th. And then the LaSalle and San Juan, October 4th to October 25th. And the, like I said, the spot and stock permits, it's usually a lower success hunt. Prior to this year, though, our success rate on that hunt was pretty high. We were at 20% last year, but because we increased the majority of our permits there, the success went, the percent of permits filled went down quite a bit. We're recommending, again, limited entry multi-season permits. If you are successful in drawing one of these, you can hunt any of the seasons approved for the unit the permit is authorized for. You must use the appropriate weapon type and method authorized for the season that you're hunting. It cannot be used during a harvest objective season or for pursuit. And during this hunt, the percent permits filled are 49%. Again, we will be recommending some harvest objective units. Harvest objective is used primarily on those heavy harvest units where we have a lot of problems. So 9 miles, one of those. Spring season dates, we're recommending April 2nd to June 3rd with no bait being allowed on any of the harvest objective seasons. The percent permits filled during the spring season on this was at 95%. We're recommending fall season dates. This is on the these dates will be on the 9 mile only. It'll be from September 26th to October 28th. During the season, it's spot and stock only, no bait or no hounds, and the percent permits filled on this were at 70%. And again, just a reminder on harvest objective, we establish a quota for a unit, we sell unlimited numbers of permits, and the season stays open until either the season date ends or the quota is filled. And I'll just go through, so like I said, the majority of permit recommendations are not changing. So I'll just kind of gloss over these unless you have specific questions about a unit. And I'll just highlight the changes. The northern region pretty much is staying with what they had last year. The northeastern region, early on when recommendations first came out, the northeastern region had recommended an increase on the Buck Cliffs units. They've since backed off on that request increase, and what they're recommending is that we go with exactly what they had last year. The North Slope, West Daggett, Three Corners, they're recommending a decrease of 3, and on the Wasatch Mountains of Inaquin, an increase of 4. Central region, Wasatch Mountains West was one of the problems where we had, one of the units where we had a lot of livestock depredation and nuisance problems. We got a lot of cabin lots and things there. We ran a quota season and we hit that quota quite fast last year. The region feels comfortable with what we harvested this last year and that it has resolved some of their problems, so they're recommending a decrease of 15 on that unit. Southeastern region, I'll hit these for Guy, but if you have questions, I'm going to have him answer them for you guys. But they're recommending an increase on the majority of the units down here. And then the southern region, the beaver unit, they're recommending a decrease of 5. On the Panguitch Lake, a decrease by 1. And then on the Plateau Boulder, Kaparowitz and Fish Lake, Thousand Lake, increases on those two. We're recommending our season dates for general pursuit season be similar to what they have been in the past, April 2nd to June 3rd for spring, July 4th to August 7th for summer, and then a fall season, October 29th to November 17th. We're not recommending any changes to the restricted pursuit season, so we're keeping those at the same number as they were this past year, with the following season dates, July 4th to July 18th, and then July 25th to August 7th. We're recommending one rule change at the request of the U.S. Forest Service. Previously, when you applied for a bait COR through the Division of Wildlife, we require that you bring in permission, verification of permission, either from a private landowner. In rule, we have listed the BLM or the Forest Service so that we know that they agreed to your placement of bait. The Forest Service isn't allowed to grant permission to do that activity on forests, and so they've requested that we remove this from our rule. So if you're going to be establishing a bait station on Forest Service lands, you will no longer need to get their permission first. You can just come in and get the baiting COR. The one thing that will stay in rule, though, is our rules, which you can't do it within a mile of a... So a lot of things won't change other than you won't have to go through the Forest Service to get permission first. You can't do it on trailheads. You can't do it within a mile of a campground. And so all of those things still stay in place. It's just that one step has been changed. Some of the forests have already said that they'll provide a map to some of our regional offices. But honestly, all of the details haven't been worked out to how we'll know exactly where. I know they can do closure orders if they don't want baiting in some places, or they may just provide a map with some areas marked off if they have concerns for safety or that type of thing. So in summary, we're recommending a total of 705 permits. It's an increase from last year's recommendations of by 14. The one thing that we did that I'm really happy with is that we did increase sport harvest. We reduced nuisance and depredation take by the Division of Wildlife Services. And overall, even though we increased permit numbers, it didn't increase harvest significantly from what it was last year. And then I just made a note here of the different seasons and where the increases and decreases are taking place by season. Thanks.
Leslie, I'm curious on the central region reducing their permits by 15 on that. It seems kind of up and down. I mean, do they think they just recommended too many permits to begin with and they're adjusting, or do they really think they solved the depredation problem?
I think they had quite a bit of pressure and from some sportsmen's groups and that to reduce some of that. I think they feel like they can do it at a little bit lower level and accomplish the same thing by reducing it by 15.
Okay. In this, the fall limited entry season, the one that's basically running August 20th to September, are hounds allowed on that season?
Mm-hmm. You're quiet.
Yeah, one more question. I just jotted this down. Are all the available permits then issued? There's none that are left on the table. All of them are issued every year.
Yeah.
There's probably some people that are actually don't draw then. It's a draw.
It's a limited entry draw. Right. And some of the units it takes, it's got points, and some of the units it takes a really long time to draw.
What's the trend been on the quota tags? You sell more and more of those every year?
Not really. This year we did sell quite a few. I'll have to look and see. I can tell you exactly how many, but I'll have to look it up. It's been pretty successful. I mean, the Wasatch West, we were surprised at how quickly that quota actually filled on that unit. I think the quota, if I remember right, and it's on that sheet, it was at 35, and we hit that pretty quick. I think it was at 35 or 31, and we hit it quite early. Originally, when we started the quota, there wasn't a lot of interest in it, and I think the very first year we sold 19 permits. And the beaver were, we didn't even get any harvest. I'm not even sure anyone went there, but this last year we saw quite an increase.
Leslie, question I have is, we've got a bear population that's increasing estimated 5 to 6%, which is roughly 200 bears a year, yet we only increased permits by 14. Are we keeping up there? Or are we, you know, that doesn't seem like we're keeping up.
So one of the things you have to look at, yeah, we only increased permits by 14, but you have to go back and look at, we increased sportsman harvest by 20%. So even though we only increased by 14, you got to remember that the year before, there were only 283 bears harvested by sportsmen. We increased that take by 20%. So now, rather than the division taking that maybe through nuisance and depredation, it was more of a guaranteed thing through sportsmen.
So do you predict another 20% increase by the sportsmen then? Or
It will stay in line with where it was this year, so probably right. Another 330 bears.
Okay. But we increased the overall state by 200 a year, roughly. So if we're going to stay the same in our harvest, then we're going to be losing ground.
So one of the things you have to remember, bears are really long-lived species. Females don't even breed up until they're 4 years old. So the majority of the population is controlled through female harvest. And so that's what we're monitoring. And that's why we have on the moderate and the heavy harvest and all of that, a level of female take. And so that's the majority of what we're monitoring and trying to balance. So it's not so much, the female really is what controls that. And so, you know, if you take a female before she's four, she never puts into the population. If you take a female, you know, you've taken that reproductive capability out. So that's what we're monitoring. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't know. I don't know about the math of it, but I understand that, you know, the concept there. But the math.
I mean, if
doesn't work
if
out.
We would, so you got to remember, we increased permits quite significantly last year. Another increase on top of that this year isn't going to really change that. What we're trying to do is make it more successful. I mean, I don't know that issuing a whole bunch of more hound permits or bait permits in an area isn't going to increase harvest overall. But if we can maintain this level where we're at, we can work at it incrementally. 20% increase in harvest is quite large. Because you got to remember,
sport harvest.
You know, the division nuisance take went back down to 45, which is where we are traditionally at. So we still
the total harvest was
370,
the same or less.
Right. But instead of the division taking it, which we were taking that extra 20%, now sportsmen are taking that extra 20%.
Right. Yeah.
I think where Todd's coming from is your slide said the bear population grows from 4 to 6% a year. That's the potential growth. That's not
right.
The measured growth.
And it depends on unit by unit. I mean, that's overall looking at the big picture. We estimate that it's 5 to 6%. But if you're taking females out of the population, I mean, that's reducing that from 5 to 6%. If we had no female harvest, then yeah, I'd be scared.
Okay.
Am I not getting what you're asking?
Oh, no.
Is your bear population growing, stable, or?
It's been growing. What we're trying to do is get it to stabilize, and we're trying to keep our recommendations the same so that we can follow it to see what it's doing rather than have a knee-jerk reaction and increase everything to try and get it down. We want to see what we're doing because we added a season, we increased percent permits filled using rifles. We don't want to be too drastic on the population. We'd like to monitor it and keep our recommendations the same for a while to see if what we're doing is working.
How many bears are you losing on like the highway and stuff like that? Do you have any idea on that?
Other mortality, maybe 3 or 4 a year. Not that many.
This is just a general interest question, but we had all those issues last year, and then this year it seemed like they somewhat went away. Was it a moisture? I mean, I'm just kind of interested overall if you know.
So I can't attribute non-nuisance problems to our increase in permits and all of that. It has to, some of it is weather related, food mass related, and all of that type of thing. And so what we're trying to do is get on top of it by decreasing densities in some areas and hopefully keeping bears from causing more problems when things do get more difficult.
Okay, we'll go to questions from the audience. Again, when you come up to the mic, it's your name. And if you have a comment, please bring your comment card up. Yes, yeah, so, we'll go to questions. Okay. No questions? Okay, we'll go to comments. We'll start with Randy Quayle, followed by Troy Justison.
My name's Randy Quayle. I'm here for the Utah Bowman's Association. First, I'd like to thank all members of the RAC and the wildlife people for being here tonight. It's a lot of work. I understand that, and we do appreciate all that. The Utah Bowman's Association supports the recommendations with one exception, and the exception is that we would recommend 2 weeks pre-bait. To the recommended 1 week pre-bait for bear. The Wildlife Board met last year and agreed on a 2 week pre-bait for last year, and we would like to see it remain that way for this year. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. Troy, followed by Guy Webster.
Yeah, Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Merry Christmas, everybody. We support the division's recommendation with the following exception, the same as what the UBA presented. We'd ask this RAC to vote and support a 2 week pre-bait as we had last year. We understand there's going to be some conflict. There's conflict in every aspect of hunting. It's human nature. But it's something we just got to deal with, you know. So if you're trying to avoid conflict, to me it makes sense to get rid of it all the way, because you're still going to have conflict even if you had it a week. So the benefit that it adds to those guys, we'd ask that this RAC support it. It's been voted and passed in the last three RACs. Thank you.
Guy Webster, on behalf of the Utah Hazmat Association, Swan Lake, Leslie, working with this. Got to remember, last year we did some major, major changes. We went through, hopefully the data things show similar this year. Hopefully the moisture continues this year, because that does play into it and stuff. Me speaking personally, somebody that's been running hounds for over 30 years, certain areas, yeah, the bear population is increasing, but is that always a bad thing? If they're not causing conflicts, not causing problems, a few more bears throughout the state of Utah in a state that historically is very low bear densities as compared to our surrounding neighbor states. So a 5% increase in certain areas definitely isn't a bad thing. On areas that I've hunted, buck cliffs, there's not an increase. It's stable or even maybe slightly decreased. We've got a real big concern, and Leslie, we talked about it and stuff, is lack of cubs this last year. Not any houndsmen I personally know or myself, and speaking with a good deal of people, had a very low cub count last year, and we appreciate the fact that they chose not to increase the book list until we try to get a handle on what the issue is with the cubs and where they're at and stuff. So want to thank you for that, but all in all, we go with the division's recommendations as proposed. You're probably surprised to hear me say that. We had one last year, and we're happy to play things under.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks, Guy. It is nice to hear, you know, especially year after year when there's a lot of changes, to hear that, you know, things are starting to stabilize, and maybe we're, you know, getting where we need to be. So, great. Any other comments? Cody? Okay.
If I can say one of the things to back both these guys and the association, we would not have a problem with 2 weeks early either. We don't have any objections to that with the 2 week pre-meeting.
So I'll say that in the minutes. Guy Webster mentioned that they would support the two-week prebate as mentioned by the UBA and SFW.
Can I ask Leslie for some clarification on the conflicts? Which side of it is complaining? The people trying to put bait out have dogs run across their bait, or?
It was mostly people that were putting bait out and had hounds run through their bait, or they saw hounds on cameras. Primarily the conflicts were, most of them came from Wasatch West on the front there.
If somebody's running their hounds and the hounds go through bait, or they jump a bear off a bait that isn't theirs, are the houndsmen in violation when they start a bear on the bait?
If they start running the bear from the bait, yeah, it would be technically a violation. If it runs through the bait, then no, it wouldn't be a violation. But that's part of the other reason why we, and that's the thing, that's part of the reason why we split it out, is we were trying, I mean, law enforcement has issues every single year where people are reported running hounds from bait or whatever, and with those two seasons combined, it's really hard for law enforcement to make a case. So that was part of the other reason for splitting it out, is it is illegal to run hounds from bait. Some of the other complaints that we got were that just people were throwing pizza out. This is a perception. People were throwing pizza out the window and then coming back and running their hounds from the pizza. I mean, it's just that type of illegal, you know, and you can't deal with those kind of things, but it's just that type of issue.
I didn't know it was that easy.
I know. Can you imagine? I hope it meets a pizza.
Pizza Hut, Little Caesars.
The greasier, the better.
Don't get any ideas, Charlie.
Well, I think you're going to have those problems anyway. I think we ought to go ahead and make a motion to support it and send it back to the Wildlife Board and let them, because they're going to make the final decision in it anyway. But I say we go ahead and support these guys on that two-week deal. I think any help you can get with a bow, you need, especially killing a bear.
It's bow and rifle.
You can use a rifle sure. Now.
Oh, well, okay, sorry, yeah. I need all the help I can. Anyway. I'd like to make that motion.
So let me clarify your motion. Your motion would be to accept the division's proposal as presented, with the exception to allow the two-week prebate. That's correct.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Kent Johnson. We got that, Brent? Any questions on the motion? All in favor?
I have a question.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I would say more of an amendment to accept also the rule change that was there, too, along with that motion.
I think that would be picked up in the...
Okay. It's included in the...
Yeah. I think that would be in the motion. Okay. All right. All in favor? Okay. Opposed? Motion passes, right?
Four to three.
Do you need names?
No, I got it.
Okay.
Thanks.